Sportsnet 590 The Fan. My name is George Russick alongside Jeff Sammet. Straight ahead, Daniel Friedman of WFAN in New York on the Islanders' new ownership situation. And if you're an Islanders fan,
I am.
The handsome fellow sitting to my immediate right.
Ah, George, thank you.
Maybe good news on the ownership front eventually.
Please, God, can we have some good news with the Islanders? Please.
It's only been like 30 years.
Saying this yesterday. I've said this to you before.
Have some patience.
I know, it's only been 3 decades. I said this to you before, and I was talking about it yesterday. I should be commended for still being an Islanders fan. I'm still around. You know, it's kind of like Kevin Barker from Baseball Central. He's a Denver Broncos fan.
What a Johnny-come-lately
Kevin Barker
Ooh,
is.
Look at me, Peyton Manning.
Being a Denver Broncos fan.
John Elway, crap.
How easy is
Peyton
that?
Peyton Manning, pow.
That's easy. I'm an Islanders fan. Look at me.
Listen, Leaf
look at the pain in
Leaf
my face.
Fans know about pain, too. And they keep making moves in the front office, just adding to their crazy stat geek department, and talk about that in the future of Timeline Wiki. NHL insider for Sportsnet Chris Johnston joins us now on the line. Chris, are the Maple Leafs finally spending some money in the front office?
Well, it certainly sounds that way, guys. And you know, if we had this conversation back in April when last season ended, you know, I don't think very many would have anticipated what's you know happened this summer with the Leafs front office. And you know, it's kind of continued to be an interesting thing to see. And you know, with them getting into analytics now in a more meaningful way, you know, with news circulating yesterday from Yahoo, them hiring a department essentially, you know, I think that this puts them on par with what some other teams are doing. Although I think it's particularly interesting that they hired Daryl Metcalf, who had been using Extra Skater, developed extraskater.com, where a lot of people, including myself, were first sort of able to get into that information and start to use it and look at it. And now essentially, I guess, that's property of the Leafs and his, and that will become private. So it appears that they're not only getting into it by taking an interest in it, but they're also buying some of the proprietary information that's out there.
Did Metcalf have an in? Because Richard Petty, of course, ran Toronto Maple Leafs at one time, being part of MLSC, tweeted out that his dad, not Petty's dad, but Metcalf's dad, was on the MLSC board for years. Did Metcalf have that kind of an in with the Toronto Maple Leafs that maybe at the very least his work outside the organization would be noticed and, of course, leading to this position with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, that may not have hurt, but I really do believe it's through that website that really at this point has emerged as the most accessible, I think the most common that people were using, including, I believe, some other NHL teams on a day-to-day basis. I would think that would be what would draw them to him as well. I mean, you know, this is, you know, Kyle Dubas, you know, I would assume has his hands all over these decisions. You know, I don't know that for sure, but you know, I think that he was quite familiar with the crowd that's out there. And, you know, I don't know any of these gentlemen personally, but certainly their names are familiar from the Twitter world and things of that nature. And, you know, it's interesting, been a funny summer. I mean, a lot of the guys that have been the most, you know, at the forefront of the analytics movement now seem to be getting hired by NHL teams. And you kind of wonder what's going to be left behind in their wake.
Chris, I'm sure you deal with the old guard, the old school of being anti-analytics and saying, no, I can look at the eye test. And I'm sure there's Maple Leaf fans out there who aren't crazy about all of this as well. But why not look at things from a different perspective and try to turn your franchise around, a franchise that's coming on 50 years without a Stanley Cup championship?
Yeah, well, I don't know why anyone would be too upset from it from the outside because, you know, to me, at the very least, it's just being aware of what's there, and it's another tool for them to use in making decisions. And to, you know, I don't know how anyone could really view that as harmful, though I guess there is that argument that seems to rage. You know, what remains, you know, quite unclear, and we may never know because, you know, I would think that a lot of what happens with this analytics department is kept quite hush-hush is just how significant the role is. I mean, are these guys going to be taken very seriously in decision-making or not? I mean, that's something I'm not sure how much we'll ever kind of have a handle on. But, you know, at this point, you know, what we do know is the Leafs have gone from, you know, last November where Dave Nonis appeared at the sports business conference that they had down at the Harbourfront Hotel and said that the Leafs had a budget they weren't spending. And now clearly they've devoted money, resources, and now some manpower to taking this a lot more seriously.
So He's got a new boss. He's got a couple of assistants now and a brand spanking new department of the analytics variety. What does all this about say about GM Dave Nonis?
Well, you know, I think what it says most is that he has to be willing to be open to new things and to adapt. And you know, I don't think that's any surprise to Dave. I mean, essentially, you know, he's lost the entire department of hockey operations that he's been working with, at least the senior members in Claude Loisel and Dave Poulin. And, you know, there's been a lot of changes that's happened around him with getting a new boss and Brendan Shanahan. And it was clear that day even that things were going to change. And, you know, he may not be totally comfortable with this stuff, but you know, with an open mind, you know, I don't think it signals that he's doomed or anything of that nature. I mean, I guess it's always a possibility that this front office won't work in harmony and perhaps he could, you know, eventually be in a tough position. But, you know, I've got the sense, you know, from speaking to Dave in the past that he was at least open to some of these ideas. But it's going to be kind of up to him and Brendan Shanahan to find a way to make sure all this works together and that everything can kind of work in tandem and they can, you know, start making decisions that way because, you know, if he isn't willing to change, you know, I would suggest that it doesn't spell good things for his future.
Sportsnet NHL insider Chris Johnston here on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff Salmon. My name is Jordan Drusick. Chris, do you see the Maple Leafs and Brendan Shanahan maybe now hiring an old school hockey guy to maybe augment or complement some of these hirings on the analytics side?
Probably not. I don't think so. I mean, I think the Leafs are trying to get ahead of the curve now. After, you know, sort of being behind it and you know, one hiring that kind of got lost in all the news yesterday was Brandon Pridham, who the Leafs have brought in essentially to run their cap. And, you know, I think that's a very savvy hire by them. I mean, I don't see anyone having any issue with that because he'd essentially been working for the NHL for the last 15 years. And it was his job if a team or a management group had a question about the CBA, maybe how it functioned, some of the more minutia-based points, and there are in that several hundred-page document, they would call him to get advice and to find out how it works. So, you know, there's no one more, arguably more intimately associated with the CBA, maybe some small loopholes that can be found. And, you know, by the Leafs bringing him in to run the salary cap, plus this analytics department and obviously hiring Kyle Dubas earlier this summer, you know, to me, that looks like a front office that's set right now. And, you know, likely that'll be what they go into the season with.
It just feels, Chris, again, from an owner's perspective, that these are changes that are happening to him, but that he's not, you know, part of these changes. That he's not, you know, if he's the GM and he's not instigating these changes, it feels like these are changes that are happening to him. I mean, would one be correct in feeling that way?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that these have been brought to him, and it was clear when they hired Shanahan. You know, Dave Nonis said that day that now Brennan was essentially the final word on hockey decisions, and you know he lost power in that hiring. I mean, that there's no question about that. But again, you know, I still think he's clearly the veteran guy here among this group. I believe he's 48 years old, so he's not a dinosaur by any stretch. And I think, you know, his experience still has value, you know, to that front office, certainly. And you know, I think he can take on something of a mentoring role to maybe some of the younger guys working for him. And, you know, I'm a kind of a glass half full guy in general, but I don't see this again all is bad. You know, I would imagine it's been, you know, slightly uncomfortable and might continue to be until everyone gets familiar with each other and trusts each other. You know, I think that's quite important when you're in these type of situations, you know, where you're making important decisions, where you're under the heat and the glare that they will be certainly once the season gets going and there's so much scrutiny. I mean, I think that there has to be a trust there with the people working in that front office. But, you know, I do think this can still be a model that works. But again, if it gets to a point where Dave isn't comfortable working in that environment, you know, it would, you know, all signs would point to him being the one to go because, you know, everyone else is part of the new regime and part of, you know, Brendan Shanahan's vision for how this team should be run.
Chris, did you ever think that Brendan Shanahan would head in this direction? Are you surprised at how things have, you know, essentially went down for the Maple Leafs this summer?
Yeah, I don't know how anyone could have predicted exactly this. I mean, you know, even going back to Kyle Dubas' hiring, I mean, this is a 28-year-old guy. I mean, you just don't see that happen a lot in hockey. I don't by any stretch think it's a bad hiring, but it is a little bit of an outside-the-box thinking type of hiring. And you know, that certainly wasn't speculated in any direction. I mean, Brendan Shanahan was quite clear that he was interested in seeing the Leafs. Now, the Leafs in many ways last season, in my eyes, became the test case for this analytics movement, if you will. I mean, they outperformed, you know, what the metrics said they would through most of the season, you know, particularly early in the year when they were being outshot and outplayed and winning a lot of games. And I think in many ways they believed internally that they could keep winning that way because they were getting such good goaltending. And obviously, even if they weren't getting a lot of shots, you had players like Phil Kessel who could score, you know, kind of at will in games. And they thought that was going to be a good enough metric. And we saw as everything unfolded, you know, they kind of all the predictions for them, you know, happened. They lost 12 of the last 14 games, crashed at a playoff position. And so I think it was a natural for someone in Brendan Shanahan's position to come in and at least look into the advanced stats a little bit more and then gear the organization towards that way. But, you know, kind of this wholehearted embrace of it, you know, is something I don't think a lot of people would have guessed. And, you know, now it'll be very interesting to see how it develops. I mean, I think there won't be a lot we can see right away and point to, but, you know, over time here, we might get a sense of what changes, you know, in philosophy that this has brought about.
Well, it's been 47 years, so what the hell? Like, let's try something new. I'm fine with it, and I want to see how it plays out. Now, what of the story yesterday? Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman reporting that MLSC president Tim Lywicki would be stepping down to pursue a new challenge. Lywicki, since denying the report, he's going to be taking the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge at 2 o'clock today, so he'll address the media at that time. What's your read on that whole story?
Well, I think there's certainly a lot of smoke there to the fire. And, you know, this has been around, you know, quite a while. I'd say the last couple of months, there's been a lot of whispers about this. In particular, actually, when Brendan Shanahan was hired, you know, I'd heard some people suggest that was a bit of a legacy move and you know, further distanced Tim Lywicki from running the hockey team and kind of positioned, you know, that department in a certain way when he did leave. And, you know, these questions aren't going to go away. I mean, it certainly sounds like, I didn't speak with him myself yesterday, but reading his comments that he's committed to seeing through this season for the hockey and basketball season. But, you know, it certainly sounds by next summer that he's on his way out. And you know, what that means to me in the big picture is are we going to see another change in direction? I mean, I think one thing that's plagued the Leafs, you know, the team that I follow most closely as opposed to the other sports, is the sort of lack of stability at times. And this could potentially, I mean, we're kind of forecasting if he leaves, you know, lead to that thing. I mean, is successor going to be happy with Brendan Shanahan running the hockey team and all these things? I mean, it's a turbulent kind of thing if he does end up leaving. And I think those questions are going to be there, you know, right through the year. You know, as much as he's trying to deny it, I don't think this is a story that's going away anytime soon.
I think he's made this organization better than it was when he first joined it. I think he's put the Toronto FC on the map where they actually matter at a time where they did not, because they'd been so bad for so long. The Raptors have turned their fortunes around, and it's in part with Tim Lywicki. Certainly the players, Masai Ujiri, Dwayne Casey, have a lot to say about that. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, it seems like he's put a structure in place that they can move forward with and get excited about. Do you think Lywicki has made MLSE better than it was when he first got here?
He certainly put a stamp on things, and you know, the best way we can probably evaluate him now is just the way the teams are run and the way he's constructed the behind-the-scenes machinery, I guess, in the front offices. Because, you know, yes, the Raptors had success last year, and the Leafs missed the playoffs after making the year before, but I think it's almost too soon to say, you know, whether he had any impact one way or another on that. And what's more interesting is kind of what he's constructed here from an organizational standpoint, because that's really his strength is I believe he likes to dream big and try to put people in that position to go after it. And you know, that will be his legacy if he leaves soon, is the way these front offices are built, and if they can have any success with those group of people, I think, you know, his tenure here will be seen as quite successful. But, you know, there's a lot of question marks. I mean, I think that it's clear it's been tough for him working with the, you know, a board of governors that has, you know, Rogers and Bell. We've been wondering how the marriage would work, and I think it's proven to be difficult, you know, at the board level running these teams. And, you know, there could be more changes coming if he gets a successor, so we might never really get a chance to evaluate it. And, you know, to me, I think that's tough for any organization. And, you know, the ones that tend to be the most successful are the ones that kind of put people in place and show a little patience and allow them to work through things. And you know, the big question marks, if Wycki ends up leaving here in the near future, is what does this mean for what's coming next? Are there more changes to come for these various sports teams?
Who needs continuity? Sportsnet NHL insider Chris Johnston. Chris, thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thank you.
It's 10:16 on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff Sammet. My name is George Russick. Joining us now on the line, he covers the New York Islanders for WFAN and CBS New York, Daniel Friedman. Daniel, thanks for doing this. We're hearing a report that just two more years of Charles Wong, and he's out as New York Islanders owner. Should my friend Jeff Sammet to the right of me be thrilled about this news?
Give me some good news, Daniel.
Well, I mean, there's certainly reason to be excited, I think, even before the 2 years are up, because the bottom line is these guys, Ledecky and Malkin, they're going to be minority owners, and even though they're going to be minority owners, they're going to have deep pockets, and, you know, you'd like to think that maybe they'll be able to support Wang with some more cash that maybe he couldn't come up with, even if maybe they don't have as big of a say in the decision-making process. So I think right from the start, that definitely helps. You have new energy. In, you know, in the rooms, you want to say, you have more money added to the pot to maybe spend in improving the team. So I think it's a good thing right away. And in 2 years, when Charles Wong takes a back seat and becomes a minority owner while these two guys run the show, you know, then they become at the forefront and you have a change in the guard, so to speak. So I think it is a very exciting time for Islander fans and for your co-host, for sure.
So how did we get here with Charles Wong? Because I thought he was a guy that really dreamed big, and you can look at a couple of ideas that he would have had and went, oh, really? But one, he really wanted to keep the team, at least I felt, in Long Island. He wanted to not only build an arena, but just a whole complex that would be surrounding the New York Islanders and their home. It seemed like he dreamed big. Did he do enough to try to make that happen? Did he exhaust that as much as he could? Like, how did we get here with Charles Wong?
Well, I think as far as trying to keep the team on the island, this is a guy who did everything we could, and I think we've spoken about this before, you know, and I think whatever Islander fans want to think of this guy, you know, you owe the fact that the Islanders still exist, that they still play here in New York, you owe that to Charles Wong, because this team could have been playing anywhere. It could have been in Quebec City, it could have been Kansas City, it could have been anywhere. And Charles Wong, you know, really believes in this team. He did everything he could to keep the team here. The politics in Nassau County here on Long Island are, you know, they're impossible to deal with. He offered to pay his thing himself. He couldn't get it. He offered to do a partnership with taxpayers. He couldn't get it. And ultimately, he decided to move the team to Brooklyn, which is keeping it as local as possible. You know, when at that point, he could have moved the team anywhere else. And so I think you have an owner who really did believe in keeping the team here and did everything he can. So at the very least, you know, for what they did on the ice, maybe you want to say he could have done more, and you'll be angry at him about that. But as far as keeping the team here, this is a guy who did everything, and I think more than you should have expected from an owner.
But Daniel, what's the temperature of the Islanders fans in Long Island? They're losing their team to Brooklyn. They're moving out of the Nassau Coliseum finally. This is the final season there. How excited are people on the island themselves that, oh, we have new owners, but yeah, they could flourish in the city of Brooklyn? Are people just meh about this whole situation?
Well, I don't think anything has changed since new owners as far as what the team's move to Brooklyn. I think whatever fans thought before of the move to Brooklyn, that stays the same regardless of who owns the team. I think you have very mixed feelings about this. You know, it really depends on where you live, depends on your mode of transportation, depends on whether or not you work in the city. You know, depending on who you are, this is either a very good move or a bad move. And depending on, I think very much what year you were born in. If you have more of an attachment to the dynasty years, I think you tend to feel stronger about the connection to Long Island than, say, the fan who was born in the 1990s and witnessed Ziggy Palfy and Robert Reichel and Brian Cilinski. So I think it really depends on who you are. But certainly the focus this year, and this is something that Howie Rose, the Islanders sales fan, announced stuff last night, is should be on the Coliseum this year, not necessarily ahead to the move to Brooklyn, but really it's going to be a very sentimental year, and I think the move to Brooklyn is a very touchy subject. I think you have mixed feelings all across the board.
Now, the new owners, the former Washington Capitals co-owner Jonathan Ledecky and investor Scott Malkin, what of these guys? What do you know about them, and what are your expectations of them as Islanders owners?
Well, we know that Ledecky, he's a non-executive chairman of the board of Forbes. He's a philanthropist now. He's you know, someone who obviously he's got deep pockets. He funds a lot of different scholarships in this and foundations. And Malkin, he is not in the center for the Pittsburgh Penguins, unfortunately, but he's a founder and chairman of Value Retail. He's done very well for himself in the retail business. He lives in London right now, but these guys have deep pockets, and they were roomed together in Harvard years back. So they go way back. So and that's courtesy of Eric Hornick, who's a statistician for MSG Broadcast. I own the MSG Broadcast. He kind of dug this stuff up. So that's what we know about them. And you know, whether or not they're going to send, you know, again, it's hard to tell right at the beginning, but you'd like to think there's new energy in it, and they have deep pockets, so you'd like to think they're going to help. But again, you know, like it's hard to tell for sure until they actually step up and until we see the results. But it certainly has the potential to be something very good for this franchise.
Covers the Islanders for WFAN and CBS New York. Daniel Friedman here on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff. I'm George. Daniel, is their number one job to cozy up to superstar John Tavares, a guy who has signed at $5.5 million all the way to the 2017-2018 season? And you talk about this team and how this influx of cash should help the team. Do you see the Islanders spending right up to the cap? And how imperative or important is it to build a relationship right away with these new owners, with their star player, to keep him in the Islander jersey essentially for his whole career?
Well, I think that's an important step for any owner of any team, whether you're new, whether you've been there for years. You know, you have to be on good terms with your star players. Otherwise, you know, they may want to leave. You know, I think that's important for anybody. But I think the fact that Charles Wong is staying in the mix, even a minority, that should help smooth things over, because the Islander superstars tend to have, for whatever reason, they tend to have a very good relationship with Charles Wong. So hopefully that should help. But, yeah, of course that's important. But I think, you know, and this is something we just talked about, but I think the biggest priority for these guys and for anyone who's going to own the Islanders or be involved with the Islanders is how to get these Islander fans who are very on the bridge, on the fence about what this move to Brooklyn, how to get them, you know, excited about this, how to convince them that this is a good thing. I think that almost supersedes anything, because if they can't convince Islander fans to come to Brooklyn, if they can't draw, if it doesn't do well, then, you know, this team is going to be in a lot of trouble, and, you know, who knows what happens then. You know, if this move ends up being disastrous, maybe they move back to Long Island. Who knows? It's a conversation for probably 15, 20 years from now. But, you know, that's, I think, the biggest order priority. But in terms of franchise superstars, that should be an important thing for any owner, certainly these guys too.
What does new ownership, or how does that affect Garth Snow and his future with the New York Islanders?
Well, I think, you know, he's safe for now. I'm not sure that he's got, you know, this get-out-of-jail-free card, like people seem to say, even with Charles Wong still aboard for 2 years. I think, you know, obviously Wong and Garth Snow are of a good relationship. Garth Snow, I think, has done better job over the years than people give him credit for. Last year was horrendous, there's no question. But I think if the team wins, it's not really going to matter. You know, I think that he is fighting for his job. He knows, even whether it's now or in 2 years, he's got to impress these guys. And also Charles Wong, he's got to impress. You know, look, it's Team Flounders forever. I'm not sure that he's going to keep him aboard. You know, so I think that for Garth Snow, I don't think this changes much.
Daniel, how pumped up are the Islanders that they have to pay one more year to Alexei Yashin at $2.2 million?
I'm sure they're excited to get that over with. You know, it's an era that unfortunately went sour, and you know, it's easier not to focus on it than the fact that the Islanders are kind of on the verge of doing something special with their young talent now. So it hasn't been as much of a distraction as it was in past years.
Daniel Friedman of CBS WFAN in New York. Daniel, we always go to you when we talk Islanders, and we're happy to do it. Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, but how did you feel, though, being a long, 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 long suffering Islanders fan? Did this move the needle for you at all when you heard this news?
It just felt like a change was coming, and it felt necessary, and it had gotten to that point. That's how it felt. It just felt like the other shoe has to drop eventually. Because I looked at it as Daniel says, felt like Wong had done everything he could to keep the team in Long Island and to do things the way he wanted to do it, and he just couldn't do it. And he said, all right, enough already. And it's not as if he owned the team for a few years. He's been around for a while. So I thought he did the best he could, and now I want to see what these new owners are all about.
Well, is that what makes it hard to hate a guy like Charles Wong as your owner of the Islanders? Because the product on the ice has been abysmal. Some of the decisions he's made and some of the people he's hired have completely set this franchise back years and years and years. But at the same token, as you mentioned, he's tried to build a new arena. He's tried to keep the team in Long Island. He's tried to, you know, build the franchise back up to what it was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Are you torn on when eventually he does leave the New York Islanders? Well, he'll be a minority owner. But when he eventually does, are you sad to see him go?
No. I wouldn't say I'm sad to see him go. Grateful for the efforts that he did make, and he kept the team there.
But at the same token, you think of like, oh man, hired Gar Snow.
Yeah,
we made some bad trades with Gar Snow. But that's what I mean.
Know,
like,
maybe
are you torn?
Maybe Maybe it's being an Islanders fan. I'm just used to this. Just used to this.
You're so beat down.
There's nothing
that you always anticipate Armageddon when it comes to your team.
There isn't an absurd scenario that you could come up with a hockey team and place it on the New York Islanders that would shock me. There really isn't. It's like you get punched in the arm so much that eventually you just lose feeling and you're like, yeah, fine, keep punching me in the arm. What do I care? That's how I feel. I feel like that guy.
You know, when I look at John Tavares' contract at $5.5 million, that's a steal for the Islanders when you look at today's landscape in the NHL. They have him locked down
crafty
for the next four seasons
Stone.
At $5.5 million.
Let me tell you something.
That's incredible.
But that also says something about John Tavares. Like, he
right.
wants to win with the Islanders.
Like, he
could have bailed.
Listen to what you just said. He wants to win with the Islanders.
Right. He wants to win with the Islanders. He believes in what they're doing. He likes their fan base. He likes playing for the symbol that he's wearing on the front of his chest. Although some of the jerseys, I wouldn't blame him for wanting to bail.
I miss the Captain Highlander jersey.
I love that jersey because everybody hates it so much.
And if Wendell Clark's listening, you still owe Sam at your Islander
Wendell
jersey.
Wendell Clark promised me that, well, maybe not promised, but I had asked him for his Islanders jersey, the Captain Highlander jersey. And
right.
It sounded like he was going to give it to me. So frankly, I think he owes it to me.
Sure.
But yeah, that's a credit to Tavares, sticking it out and wanting to stay on Long Island. Now, has he made the sacrifice that I've made over 30 years? No. But nevertheless, he should be commended. Good for him. I mean, he's still making $5.5 million a year,
and obviously
that's almost as much as I make.
His knee injury he suffered at the Olympics.
Yeah, well,
which completely killed any faint hopes the Islanders had of actually making it to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I did not watch much Islanders hockey after that, because any hopes that they had of getting into the playoffs were gone. So I was pretty much done with the Islanders at that point. And it's not me just losing faith in the club. It's like, I watched them from afar. I was like, yeah, they're losing. That's what I thought. So I didn't waste much time watching Islanders hockey.
Well, it's going to be interesting next season that they don't own their first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So if they finish last in the NHL, thanks. Which, who are we kidding?
Thanks for the reminder.
Could happen.
Thank you.
Connor McDavid goes to the Buffalo Sabres. Thanks, Gar Snow.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be great?
It's just
Jack Eichel.
Never.
Two franchise ending. Centermen. In the draft next summer.
You know what it's like? It's like I fell down a sewer,
right?
And I can't get out. That's how I feel.
Listen,
with this team. That's how
I feel about the Scott Gomez trade.
And a couple of years ago when they were going at it with the Pittsburgh Penguins in round one and they took them to six games.
Yeah.
That's like I climbed up to the top of the sewer and then I fell back in last year. Like I'm still swimming in crap with this club. Still swimming in it.
For years.
And I'm trying to get out of it.
Years.
For years.
Maple Leaf fans
like,
feel your pain,
like,
too,
I've
though.
I've become accustomed to the smell. That's how it is.
Maple Leaf fans feel your pain, though. And yeah, now a new president on the way in, potentially.
I suppose.
Just when there's no continuity with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I guess.
10:30 on the Jeff Blair Show. Straight ahead, Alex Pruitt, Capitals reporter for the Washington Post. Yeah, it's all great that, you know, the Capitals are hosting the Winter Classic, but where the hell are they going to play the game?
Yeah, you know, when you have a big event, you know what you need? A venue.
Right.
It's like throwing a big party and then going, oh,
we
actually need a place to have it, right?
I have an idea. the roof of the Verizon Center. We'll ask Alex Brewitt that straight.
Actually, the NHL apparently kick tires on a very, very interesting idea that'll never happen. But man, we got to talk about that.
We'll talk to Alex Brewitt, straight ahead, Capitals reporter for the Washington Post. As the Jeff Blair Show continues, that's long-suffering Islanders fan Jeff Sammet. My name is George Russick, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
I get it, Alex Ovechkin's rush. The Jeff Blair Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. That's Jeff Sammet. My name is George Russick. Straight ahead on the show, MLB writer for SI.com, Cliff Corcoran. You know how all these callers are complaining and whining that the Blue Jays didn't make a blockbuster deal at the deadline? The Tigers and A's sure did, and right now, not working out for them.
Which is not to say that if the Blue Jays pulled off a blockbuster deal, it wouldn't have worked out for them.
Yes.
But you're saying that?
No.
Okay.
Just wanted to overreact.
Never know. It could have worked out for them. John Morosi was on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, this morning, and he said he felt that the Blue Jays could have benefited from a deal at the trade deadline, like that was necessary. Also pointing out that it did not work for some other teams, but that it could have helped the Toronto Blue Jays. So who's to say it wouldn't have? But who's to say it would have? Oh. Both sides there. You never know. Who knows? But they didn't take a shot, George. They didn't take a shot.
Oh,
okay.
Come on.
We had the first
hour. Come on.
We had the whole first hour.
All right.
We had the whole first hour.
The 2015 Winter Classic will be played between the Washington Capitals and the Chicago Blackhawks somewhere around Washington, D.C. There is no venue yet.
A street hockey game coming near you in the Washington
That would
area.
Be awesome. Alex Prude, who covers the Capitals for the Washington Post, joins us here on the Jeff Blair Show. Alex, thanks for jumping on this morning. Really? No venue yet? And they're going to put this thing potentially at dumpy FedEx, not FedEx Field, but old school RFK Stadium?
Most likely not, but it would seem that if they fall through with Nationals Park, that's probably where it would be. I think this is a lay at this point. And bear in mind, there's been really nothing said on the record by anyone. The Capitals really aren't involved with negotiations. It's between the venue and the NHL, and neither side's really talking. So the fact that it's taken so long is kind of an indication that there's some sort of hang-up along the way. And there's a lot of minutia that goes into these things. Things as little as, ticket distribution, who gets the revenue, who gets suites, stuff like that. And there's, things when added up together, kind of forms a big event, but taken in itself, could represent a little speed bump here or there if people want to nitpick over it. So, I expect that's happening. No one's really come out and said it, but that's kind of the assumption that you can make, that there's, some discussions going on, some hiccups that are happening along the way.
Well, and this has happened before. The 2012 Winter Classic site wasn't announced as Citizens Bank Park in Philly until the September before the event. So, right. I look at it and say, while this is odd, it's not as if this hasn't happened before.
No, it's not unprecedented. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was kind of because they were looking at Lincoln Financial, and then that kind of fell through, so they went to Citizens Bank Park instead. But here, Nationals Park has been the clear front runner since the beginning. You can't play it at FedEx because the Redskins play on December 28th. Same with over M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. Camden Yards has said there's been really no contact. I know they scouted out Camden, they scouted out RFK, they scouted out FedEx, but all times really point to Nationals Park. So the fact that they've been on that kind of streamlined path towards finalizing that venue and it hasn't gotten done is, like I said, kind of an indication that in the negotiations something's happening. Or but everything I've heard is still signs still pointing to Nationals Park. It's just taking time.
Alex, you also mentioned there's a chance that this thing could be maybe moved to Camden Yards. Is that kind of a kind of push the envelope, or push things along with the Nationals to get this game at Nationals Park?
I don't think that's going to happen at Camden Yards. I think kind of baseball representatives and people up there have said that they haven't really had much contact beyond, initial expression of interest, but that was way back when, they were just still trying to scout out venues.
What of the idea that's been floated out there, and how serious is it of the NHL looking into it? And if they did, bravo, because it would have been spectacular. But using the National Mall as a venue, as a place where they could have had the Winter Classic, that would have been unbelievable.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? I mean, just roll off some bleachers and just kind of play on that pond.
Oh.
That's not going to happen. But
no.
I mean, maybe down the road, because like you said, you probably couldn't pick a cooler thing to have, cooler place to have an outdoor game, maybe in the country. But, you know, just all the National Mall, you're framed by the monument, and the memorial, stuff like that. It'd be pretty cool.
But what would be the logistics, though, to have something like that, Alex? Is that, I know it's pie in the sky talk, but could that actually be done? Could that actually happen?
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't really looked into that far. I would imagine that it would take a lot of planning, much more than, you know, just kind of scraping it together in late August and trying to get the game on New Year's Day. I would imagine it would take a long time to, you know, get permits, figure out where you're actually going to put people, where you're going to put all the fans, how to handle parking, because it is a very public space, and, you know, thousands of tourists go there every day.
Well, tell us more about the area at Nationals Park, because it's been a few years since I've been there, and that seemed to be like the building, the project that was going to really set off an area of Washington that needed some help. Is that still the case? Where are they at now with the area around Nationals Park?
It's fast rising. I actually just moved into one of the apartment buildings a couple blocks away. You know, one of the high rises, one of the rooftop pools. It's kind of one of the nicer places. You know, they're still breaking ground on some more apartment buildings, some more restaurants, but it's, I mean, totally different than what it used to be when you were here, when it was, you know, still essentially just Nationals Park and then a bunch of empty plots that they're still trying to figure out what to do with. But it's moving up. It's a very nice area, you know, still by the water. I mean, Nationals Park was obviously kind of the centerpiece of it, and it's a beautiful stadium, you know, with the cherry blossoms bloom at the place, and you know, there are restaurants around. You know, there's a few bars and apartment buildings that I mentioned. I mean, a lot of concerts still going on Nationals Park. I mean, there's a One Direction concert there the other night, and the place was just absolutely flooded.
Jeff's favorite.
You know, teenage girls and their parents and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's a thriving area. I mean, it's still up and coming. I don't think it's where I would imagine where they would want it to be, but I think it's still kind of on that path.
Alex, is there some optimism heading into the season now amongst the fans that Barry Trotz and Brian McClellan are in charge of this hockey club? Is there sunnier days ahead for the Capitals?
I think fans would view that there are certainly sunnier days. I don't know what the realistic ceiling is for them this year, because, you know, like you said, it is a new regime. You know, there still is going to be some turnover. They brought in a couple pretty high-priced additions in Matt Pittman and Brooks Orpik, guys that I think fans would probably bobble over when it comes to the actual contract, the length and value that they were given by Brian McClellan. But, I mean, by all accounts, you know, bringing in a guy like Barry Trotz is giving them a different direction. I mean, they haven't had a coach with NHL experience in some time to actually come in. And he's, you know, he was the only coach in Predators history. He's been around the block 16 seasons there. I think he brings kind of a certain firmness and certain direction that they haven't had in the past when they were actually brought in new coaches.
Alex Pruitt, Capitals reporter, Washington Post. Thank you, Alex, for this. Appreciate the update.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
What am I thinking a couple of years ago? It was last year. I've been watching it a few times, to that park a few times. Last year was the last time I went. And as I recall, it didn't really feel like an up-and-coming area, but it wasn't as desolate as it had been a few years ago.
You know how I have a disdain for the only thing I don't mind is the Winter Classic itself. On New Year's Day, fine. Once a year, fine. You know I hate with a passion all the other outdoor games because the NHL is just trying to make money quick.
Of course.
They're all just giant cash grabs, and they're terrible.
But that's this day and age.
Minus
something
the Heritage Classic between the Canucks and the Senators at BC Place.
That was one of those.
That was an epic hockey. You knew you the
you
country
knew where
stood
you
still.
Were when, right.
The country stood still during
right.
that game.
But you know what? I don't care. They enjoyed
but
it over
think
there.
About, it's fine. Think about if they had that game at the National Mall in D.C. Think about how cool that would be. That would
be
the
cool.
crown jewel of the NHL Winter Classics.
It would be. In have you been there before?
No.
Okay, I've been there before, and yeah, there are memorials around there as
I'm
well.
I'm sure you can pay tribute and do the thing at the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, maybe there's a way of doing it. Like, I wouldn't think of those things and say, well, that's conducive to having a hockey game here.
Right.
You know, so from that standpoint, it didn't dawn on me until we were actually talking to Alex. So I can see, like, if that were the reason, I'd be totally fine with it. Like, if the reason not to have it there, like, they said, no, there's memorials here. We remember those that we've lost in very troubling times under very difficult circumstances. So, no, that's not something that's going to happen around here. And I would totally understand that. But just having been there and the massive space that's there and the history that's there and how scenic it would look, that would be pretty cool. That would be quite a spectacular vision to behold. I would really like to see that.
I know it does well down south anyway, the TV numbers, but imagine the TV ratings. I think it would be a bump if the game was played at the National Mall. Just the interest factor.
It's just because that raises the stakes. Because we've seen it now. Now we've seen in cold climates, in warm climates, we've seen hockey games played at football stadiums, at baseball stadiums. We've seen this put together where it's to a point now where we go, yeah, it's in Washington this time. Well, I guess they're going to play Nationals Park. Huh, okay.
At least that would be something different.
That's where they're having it this year, huh?
Mount Rushmore, the site of the 2016 NHL Winter Classic.
Who were we talking to was out of Vegas where they were trying to get a rink built on top of a hotel?
That's not surprising.
Remember? Yeah, that would be fantastic.
But the National Mall, that would be cool. And you know how cynical I am towards the outdoor games. I think that would be cool.
I think you're a big liar because we've talked about it before where if there was going to be an outdoor game in Toronto,
I don't support it. I wouldn't go at all.
If it was not the Winter Classic. Like if it was played in March.
Even if there's a Winter Classic.
But you wouldn't go?
No.
Come on.
No, I wouldn't.
Go.
No,
you'd be first in line.
No. Are you kidding me?
Leaves Habs?
No, I wouldn't go.
You would be there.
I'm as soft as butter in the hot sun. Why would I want to freeze my ass off down by the lakeshore?
Come on, Jeff. Let's get tickets.
Watch a hockey game from distance.
Let's get tickets. Let's see if our bosses will give us free tickets.
No, hey, never.
Hey, boss, can I cover the events? Do you need another reporter? You'd be that guy.
And I would definitely say it with more, spunk and cheer. Hey, boss, can I cover that event?
Hey, boss.
Aw, shucks, George. Yes, you can.
What do you need, boss? Need an extra reporter?
The name's Scoop Rusick.
I could do it, see? Hey, Coach Carlisle, who are you going to start in goal?
It's not James Reimer because he's not a number one. It's 10:51 on the Jeff Blair Show.
I didn't do it on purpose, but I laid that right up for you.
All I need to do is a shot against Buffalo and how it fires all the time.
Oh,
Cliff Corcoran, MLB writer for SI.com, will join us straight ahead. And talking about the misfortunes of the Detroit Tigers and Oakland A's following their blockbuster deal at the deadline, a deadline which many Blue Jay fans said, the Blue Jays should have did something. That's straight ahead on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff Sammet. My name is George Rusick, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.